No matter how old you are, the Rolling Stones have probably been a part of the soundtrack of your life. There are shelves of books about the Rolling Stones, but a new one takes an academic look at their legacy. Joining us now is Victor Coelho, co-editor of the Cambridge Companion to the Rolling Stones, just out. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you, Jeremy. Nice to be here.
And this book is a serious academic look at the Rolling Stones. In fact, the essays have a ton of footnotes. What is the goal?
So the Stones have been approached by biographers and by themselves. You know, there are so many autobiographies by the Stones that give us firsthand accounts. The deep musical knowledge, the long influences that stretch back into the Delta, into country music, into American vernacular idioms, as well as their presence in film, their huge cultural impact. Those issues are all brought together in the Cambridge Companion. And it was a time to look back at the Stones' career as a vital part of music history, not just in popular music history, but in music history itself.
Well, and you write in this book, and I love this, adapting to and in many cases anticipating new or retro trends in popular music during their long career, the Stones went into rock, folk, psychedelic, funk, punk, reggae, disco, and others, but remained true to the fundamental stylistic roots and sound of rock and roll, R&B, country, and the blues. So many genres associated with the Stones.
Yeah, and throughout their career, they were able to manage all those genres. I mean, reggae and disco and punk were all parts of their musical template in the 1970s and 80s. And in fact, the book started out as a book about the Stones starting from around 1978, when, in fact, they were trying to navigate the choppy waters of stylistic change and all the new things that were taking place, and then coming into the digital age and dance music and discotheques and grunge. So really, the book was always positioned as a way to understand how the Stones are – how the Stones adapt to styles. And when they adapt, they still remain true to this the fundamental influences. And that all comes full circle in their last album, Blue and Lonesome, which is really a bunch of songs that are back to their blues days.
I'm gonna leave you, baby.
Well, let's go back to the early days. And in your first essay, you write about what the Stones were doing between 1968 and 1972. What is the significance of those years in the band's story?
So I call those the exilic years, the years where they almost make themselves a self-imposed exiles, like very famous exiles in the history of culture, whether it's Dante or Solzhenitsyn or the devil, the first exile. It's a turn away from England. I mean, their first period, I always see these three periods as being England, in London especially, and then America, which is the big opening up in 1968. And then the last period is this revival post-1989, which I call Second Life, in which they curate their own history almost as a performing museum. But this period is when they began to turn towards America and turn towards the deep musical traditions of America. They've left their confrontation of aristocratic England and those challenges of class behind that are all about Satisfaction and Ruby Tuesday and a number of different songs of that period. And now they turn towards America, and they move deeper and deeper into American vernacular styles, influenced by Gram Parsons and Ry Cooder and some great American players. And they start to pick up dialects, and their dialects are dialects of Mississippi and of Bakersfield, California, and of country and western, and of new guitar styles. And these dialects start to infiltrate their music. It makes their music neither old nor new. It seems to balance both sides.
Well, let's listen to one song from that era. This is Gimme Shelter.
Just a shadow.
What do you hear when you hear that song?
Every time I hear it, I hear something different, but there's one fundamental thing I hear, and that is the beginning of this album, which is quite dark. The darkness is very much 1969. It's the same year as The Moonshot. It's also the same year as Woodstock. But 1969 ends up being a year that has one of the what some people have called the Pearl Harbor of Woodstock, and that was the Stones concert at Altamont, in which one of the concert goers died, stabbed by a Hell's Angel. And this song anticipates this so amazingly, with this sort of howling in the background, the minor key opening, the descending progression that continues throughout the whole song, and then the climax of the words, rape, murder, is just a shot away. So the Stones set up this song as a way to narrate 69, and 1969 is not about really Woodstock. It's still about Vietnam. It's still about violence in the streets. It's still about protest, and mm-hmm. it's still about a darkness that envelops most of America. Woodstock is more a memory from later. This is the reality.
How were you able to learn so much about the Rolling Stones and why they did what they did and how they were influenced as they were writing the music through the decades?
So I'm a player, and I'm a musicologist. So for me, I was not that interested in who the Stones were going out with and what clubs they went and things like that. I was always interested in the music. And that was first and foremost. And when I teach my Rolling Stones class, I teach it from behind a guitar. It's always about music, and it's always about influences. The Stones were, for me, the place that led me to other styles. They were the ones that guided me. I was not able, 10 years younger, a little bit more than Mick and Keith and the boys. So I did not come to the Chicago Blues revival like they did. I had to be led to it. So they're also the ones who led me to Robert Johnson, and they led me to country music. And so it was through them that I began to listen to Merle Haggard. It was through them that I started to think about Nashville and all these different tunings. They're the ones who led me to all these different styles. They led me to French, you know, new wave cinema, you know, with Jean-Luc Godard. They led me to Bulgakov's Master and Margarita and to read that. Wow. So they led me to other groups as well, and they led me to reggae. So that's how, you know, I just willingly followed, and I let them just lead me on to their musical traditions.
When was the last time you saw the Rolling Stones?
A couple of years ago.
Do they still, I mean, Mick Jagger still got the energy, but I mean, do they still feel the same as they once did?
Yeah, I mean, it's always the same, because they still have that sound. And again, it's the sound of the Stones, which is the most important thing. They look like great bluesmen. You know, that's what they look like, and that's who they should be looking at. Like, rock is an interesting genre because it's completely gone beyond the fact that it's a youthful pastime. Rock is a style in music history, and I see the Stones at their age just like I would see a conductor at the age of 75.
Do your students share your love of the Stones?
Yeah, I've been teaching a Stones class since probably 94, and so the Stones are continuing to. If you go to a Stones concert, you'll see the whole range of people. The other day, I played a gig, and we brought a young guitarist up from one of the classes that I'm teaching on the Stones, and he knows the whole repertoire cold. At the same time, there's some people who've never heard a note of the Stones, so it's no different really than any other music that I teach. You know, some people know it all, some people know zero.
And for all of the years and all the love of the Stones that you have, what's your favorite song?
It changes all the time, but right now I'm starting to listen to a lot to "Street Fighting Man," which is from Beggar's Banquet. And again, it's something about the sound of that recording. And I'm focusing a lot on sound these days because we've lost a lot of that dynamic of what sound is because we all listen to music through headphones. We listen to music that is compressed in MP3 formats. Mm-hmm. The Stones' music just jumps off the record, you know, and when you put the needle on a vinyl, that sound comes off in a way that is impossible to duplicate with headphones. And Street Fighting Man is one of those. The guitar sounds in the studio, they placed a microphone on a tape recorder of Keith playing that riff. And so it comes out in a kind of third generation format. There's nothing like it. And so that's what I'm still impressed by. I wish I could duplicate it.
That is Victor Coelho, who's co-editor of the Cambridge Companion to the Rolling Stones, which is just out. He's also professor of music at Boston University. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's a pleasure.
And you can read an excerpt from the book at hereandnow.org.